everybody, and welcome to episode number 44 of Girl Fight. My name is Nicole Tanner, and I am your host today. I'm joined by Stephanie Lee.
What up?
Neha Tiwari.
Hello.
And Megan Sullivan.
Ba 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 ba.
Megan's always in such a good mood.
Final Fantasy Victory fanfare.
Even though you have somewhat forsaken the Final Fantasy franchise.
It's just not the same anymore.
Yeah.
It makes me sad.
I agree.
Yeah. So longtime Girl Fight listeners are probably out there going, who is Neha? However, if you listen to some of the other IGN podcasts, namely the infamous Knockin' Boots.
No one listens to that.
You have heard Neha. So do you want to take a second and introduce yourself and talk about what you do here at IGN?
Oh, sure. So I've only been here for about 6 months, and I've been on the Tech Fetish podcast as well as the Knockin' Boots podcast, which is a lot of fun. Kind of the female perspective, which, let's face it, those guys need. essentially, I just actually recently transitioned to a new role here, heading up the kind of like the video and creative stuff that goes into the IGN Pro League, which is our new esports division. Mm-hmm. So if any of you guys out there are StarCraft fans or really big into esports, do check out IGN.com/IPL. And, the tournament actually starts on the 21st of April. But we have some videos and other stuff in there so that you can get to know our players and, fun stuff like that. So stay tuned.
Yeah, cool. And that also kind of leads into a little bit about IGN Prime, which is our new premium service. If you guys used to be members of IGN Insider, you're probably like, this is ridiculous, and why do I pay for this? However, IGN Prime is much, much better. You're going to get a lot more content, and it's not just going to be random articles that are put behind a subscription gate for seemingly no reason. This is going to be really, really unique content, so including like tips from pro StarCraft players and... So, IGN Prime is available now. I believe you can get to it from the homepage. If not, you can definitely get to it from the My IGN homepage. There'll be a little tab at the top that says Prime, so you guys should definitely check it out if you are interested. Another quick little shout-out I want to do, I just want to personally say thank you to everybody out there who pinged me on Facebook and Twitter and My IGN and everywhere else. Offering their condolences. It really means a lot to me that you guys, even though we are complete strangers, can act like you care so much. So that's been really helpful in coping. I'm going to warn you, I'm not going to be my cheerful self for a little bit, but being back at work is helping return a sense of normalcy. So thanks to everybody who did that. You guys are great. Other announcements, final winners of our trivia contests. We had 3 shirts left, so I just picked 3 winners this time. So Shane Newth, Jorge Palomino, and Jacqueline Mamaril are our final winners. You will all be getting a ladies' small t-shirt. Sorry, that's all we have left.
Congratulations.
So, yeah. So if you haven't already, send your address to IGNGirlFight@gmail.com. And we'll try to have some more contests as soon as we can. And with all that out of the way, let's get started with what we're playing. Megan, do you want to start?
Well, I haven't been playing much in the past couple of weeks. I'm still working my way through Third Birthday and Dissidia. And I don't know. I never played the original Parasite Eve, but is Aya supposed to be weak and helpless? Because that is not the impression that I got from talking to people who played the original Parasite Eve game. And I don't know about Third Birthday. Like, the gameplay is really fun. Like, I'm enjoying that. But the story is convoluted, and Aya is just annoying me with her moans and groans and whining, and I don't know what that is.
Yeah, she's not supposed to be a helpless heroine.
Yeah, sure. that is the impression that I got, where I read a lot of good things about her. I was like, you know, I never got to play the original Parasite Eve. Third Birthday looks cool, and it's ironic. I'm enjoying the gameplay, but it's...
Does the story still revolve around, like, the mitochondria being mutated and then people
I don't know what it's supposed to to be honest. It's, you're going back and forth in the future, and the way the story is told, I'm like, what is happening? What is going on? And remind me why I care. Like, it has some interesting concepts, but I'm just lost at this point where I'm like, okay, maybe I need to get further in the game to start understanding it. But
does it still have the Resident Evil control scheme?
I don't know. This is my first. I haven't played Resident Evil or Parasite Eve, so this is my first kind of dip into that hole.
You can only move forward if you press forward on the control stick, right?
No, you can run around. Okay. I mean, the camera is kind of wonky, but you get to kind of jump from person to person, so you get to jump into other people's mind and control them, and it's a cool concept. But I couldn't tell you about the controls aren't bad. The camera's just a little frustrating if you're in close quarters with an enemy, but it's like, it's a good game. I just, the story and Aya is just so disappointing.
I might actually be wrong about the control scheme being like Resident Evil, because it's been a really long time since I played.
Yeah, so I played that, and I'm thinking I'm going to give up on Dissidia. It's the story, and that is going nowhere. It's a fun game, but it's not really my type of game, and that's pretty much been it. I've been busy doing other stuff. So like a couple weeks ago, a bunch of us went to WonderCon, which was really fun. And Neha and I got some cool swag.
First of all, we had a really good time. And Megan and I and a bunch of other IGNers met up and kind of went around the floor, which was really fun.
Yeah.
And there was plenty to see.
Yeah, there was a lot to see, although everyone stopped every 15 feet to street pass with their 3DSs, drove me nuts. I was the only one without a 3DS, so I admit
that. Me too. And so, you know, I kept seeing people do that, and I was like, you guys, stop it.
You're uber nerds among nerds.
Stop your 3DS fornication now.
It is a little ridiculous. So, yeah. And, I mean, there were some cool panels I went to one about writing for science fiction and fantasy, which was pretty crowded. But Dan and I left because the show floor was closing. And somebody, I think our friend Gadge, actually emailed us that he had gotten these Final Fantasy VI character pins. And so Dan and I flew down to the showroom floor with like 5 minutes to spare to look for these pins. We didn't find those, but I found these cool sprite beads, which are those beads that you flatten and make into artwork. And so I got one of Terra from Final Fantasy VI and a larger one of Aerith from Final Fantasy VII. And that was really cool. I have no idea what I'm going to do with them. I guess stick them on a wall or something, but they're cool. Yeah. So, yeah. And then I got an artist to draw a picture of me as Yuna from Final Fantasy X, which was really awesome. And I don't know. Neha got really cool stuff, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had a great time, and I also got a chance to go to a couple of panels. Both of the panels I went to were related to Marvel, so got a sneak peek of and I've heard that people have seen this before, but it's the G4 series with you know, kind of like the anime Wolverine.
Right.
They're also doing like an Iron Man. And I also saw like a preview of the new Ultimate Spider-Man, which is being produced solely by Marvel, which apparently this is the first time that's ever happened, because they've always kind of contracted out their production for animated series. Mm-hmm. And my one criticism, though, is I didn't really like the voice of Spider-Man. But you know, everyone kind of says that you're partial to, you know, the series that you grew up with. And for me, it was the animated series from 92.
That was such an awesome cartoon.
That was my, and also X-Men of the circa around the same time, where, you know, those were both solid.
Yeah.
And Batman too, actually, although I didn't care for the way it was animated back then, because he was way too chiseled and
I liked it. I thought that was awesome. Of course, Mark Hamill really helped as a Joker.
Yes. But in any case, those were really cool panels, and I did get a lot of really cool stuff. I also got a sprite bead thing, but I got a little, it's a pin, and it was a Star Trek pin. And so I've never actually dressed up for WonderCon, but I decided to do that this time. So I dressed up as Uhura, and it actually has like a little, you know, the little Star Trek symbol sewn on, but it looked really sad. So I got a big pixelated one,
cool,
which looked really cool. And I also got a couple of really cool posters for the home office. So I got this, it was like the Gotham Evening Post, the Saturday Evening Post, and it had a picture of the Joker and Harlequin. So, yeah,
and she's straightening his bow tie.
Yeah,
which I love.
His bow tie. And it just has like that total DC look, which I love. And also, like a similar last minute story, like Megan, I kind of decided that I wanted to get the Spider-Man issue where him and Mary Jane get married, just because it's a really iconic cover. And I have the annual that contains, you know, so I've read it, but I just didn't own the actual, you know, like issue of it. So got that, and I'm going to frame it.
Yeah.
So I found it. I was scrambling around, and it was just like this like moment of victory.
Yeah.
To get it, which was great.
Like,
so
score!
I was like, yes, awesome. And I also purchased a Walking Dead Volume 1 for my brother and got it signed.
That's cool. Oh, I got a Barbie. That's the other thing.
Oh, yeah, the Barbie.
I got the Victorian Barbie doll. Because I collect Barbie dolls, and I saw that, and I was just like, $30, suckers.
Yeah.
Is it worth a lot more?
It probably will be in the next few years, but I think we were discussing like a week ago with Dana that I probably won't sell it anyway because it's just...
And who does? Like, I'm curious even for you folks out there. Like, do any of you actually like sell your comic books and stuff? Because I have a whole box of them that I've been collecting since I was a kid. And, like, I don't plan on getting rid of those at all. So
yeah, you always claim, oh, I can make thousands of or hundreds of dollars on eBay. And then you're like,
I don't
know. But they're, you know.
But maybe one day, like, your great grandkid will find it in the attic and be like, I have no use for this.
Oh, yeah.
And just rope in the millions. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Anyway.
So what about games?
Oh, okay. So I've been trying to work through Halo 3 because it was like on my list of games. I'm a little behind on the games, people, just FYI. But I've been playing that, and I don't know. I don't think I actually like it that much, so I may stop. yeah, I figured it was. I'm really getting quite excited about Portal 2. And this could sound dorky, but my husband and I totally game together, so we're really, really excited about it.
Yes.
So you can like play, because we play Halo together, and it's, you know, it is what it is.
Portal 2 looks so hard, though.
It does. It does. And, you know, the funny thing with the first Portal, too, is, like, I did have trouble beating it because those last levels were, like, really hard. Like, they were – I mean, I would get, like, mentally fatigued.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I was just – I had to, like, put down the controller and be like, I don't know. Like, I don't understand how to get over there.
I used to get headaches when I was playing, and I couldn't play more than, like, 4 or 5 levels at a time.
Yeah.
But the thing that it did, too – I mean, it did get difficult at the end, but it did a really good job of sort of baby-stepping you up to that level. So I have a feeling the second one's probably going to do
I
the same
so.
Thing.
I hope so. I hope it's not just like, well, you played the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a really hard game.
Yeah. I mean, there are people who are gluttons for punishment. Like Demon's Souls is a game that the last game I remember really rage quitting because I couldn't get past the first level. So I don't want Portal 2 to be like that, where it's just like, you're going to have to work every second to beat this game.
Yeah. I mean, because it is just exhausting to some degree. But and I just like on the mobile platform, like I'm still moving through Angry Birds and enjoying every level. And also, I don't know if any of you guys out there use like, you know, on Google Chrome, but they have like these like two games advertised, and one of them is called Entanglement. And I love that game. it's so silly. Like I was like booking reservations on a random weekend. And I got like really bored and I was like, oh, what is this? And I clicked on it and like, I love it. It's just like a little puzzle game, and it's just fun. I totally dig it. So you guys should check that out.
Cool.
Entanglement?
Yeah. Good waste
to write
of time
that down.
Game. It's fun. It's addicting.
Awesome. How about you, Steph?
Well, for work, I've been playing Dragon Age 2. I expect to play that for another...
You're never going to finish that.
Okay. It's like
you've been working so hard the past few weeks.
No, I'm seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
Ooh.
Yes.
Oh, well, that's good.
But then they're going to announce a DLC.
The process starts all over.
I actually still have the two initial DLCs to work through. But I'm hoping to get it done by the time LA Noire hits, so... I'm actually really excited about that game. But aside from doing Dragon Age 2 for work, I've been playing Crysis 2. Mm-hmm. Really enjoying that. It's been a while since I've been really engrossed in a first-person shooter. So.
Are you playing on PC or console?
Console.
Or?
Xbox 360.
I don't
have a PC that can run it. I haven't had a PC. I haven't had a PC since, like, 2004.
I can't play first-person shooter games, but I've been told, like, even on Xbox with Half-Life 2, it's like, I know I'd enjoy this game, but on this console, the controls are wonky.
Okay, so I totally had a similar conversation recently with somebody, I forgot who, but I guess I'm not alone, because for a while, I was just like, I don't know why, I'm having, like, trouble playing Halo 3. Like, it's hard for me in a stupid way that it shouldn't be hard, because you know, I was a PC gamer, and I played Metal Gear Solid, I played Doom, like, you know, all that on the PC. But it's just like, when I play first person shooters on the console, it's like really hard.
No, I know what you're talking
about. It's confusing.
I grew up playing first person shooter on the PC.
How did you transition? Like, how did you?
You just kind of have to jump into it, and it feels really slow. It just feels like the control stick's very restrictive at first.
Yeah.
Because you obviously can't. You don't have the precision of a mouse.
Right.
But
yeah, I think that's partially what the thing with Portal also was, like, the first levels are easy anyway, but like some of the precision and timing is so key in those last levels of Portal.
Right.
And I'm sitting there with this controller like, oh, come on.
Yeah. And it's not doing what you want it to do. I guess there is a lot more control with PC gaming.
Yeah. And you have, I don't know, it just feels more natural to have like WASD too. Yeah. And then you have like all these other buttons, like a bajillion other buttons you can have to swap weapons and stuff.
That's true.
Yeah, that's same. Yeah. It sounds funner.
I almost feel like it's a muscle memory thing too. It's just like you just grew up a certain way doing certain things.
No, definitely.
Right. You know? But whereas if it comes to like a Mario game or something like that, then it's like, yeah, whatever, I can do this. Or like any of like the entertainment Rock Band Guitar Hero.
Yeah. Things, but you know, it's weird. I don't know if I would play like a Halo game on PC after, you know, I've already experienced it on a console game. Isn't that weird?
Because I feel like you've probably fully transitioned. You've been converted.
Yeah.
Yes.
Probably. It's been a while. Actually, no. I played Left 4 Dead 2 on the PC, and I enjoyed that much more than on the console.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So me, I'm still working my way through Dragon Age 2. I am just starting Act 3. I seriously thought the end of Act 2was the end of the game.
I did too. I totally did.
Absolutely. You know, my sister had come to visit me over the weekend, and I was playing through it the big battle. I'm not going to say who you're battling, but anyhow, there's a big battle at the end of Act 2, and it took me like a good few tries to get through it, and I'm like, oh, this is the end. And then, like, you know, you have another little story sequence, and then you pop up and everybody's leveled up, and then there are exclamation points all over the map again, and I'm like, holy crap, this isn't the end.
That's exactly how I feel writing the guide. I'm like, I'm almost done. I've knocked down all the quests on my journal.
Yeah.
And then, like, after I turn it in, it's like, bloop!
Yeah.
Exclamation points everywhere when I go into a new area, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that one, like, battle that Nicole is talking about is really epic, too. Like, I actually was like, this is kind of a cool way to end the game. Oh, no.
But there's two ways to fight that last battle. There's, like, a one-on-one duel or...
Yeah, I did the one-on-one duel, and that was why it was so epic. Because if you have everyone with you, it doesn't feel quite as epic, and it actually was harder for me for some reason.
Oh, no, it's way harder.
I didn't do the one-on-one.
I got obliterated.
I got obliterated, too, like the first few times until I...
I
actually had to implement some of the strategies that they tell you, like in the tips, like for hardcore players, like... Pause the game and give instructions to each one of your party members. And once I did that, it was a little easier because I was able to tell my mages, go stand in the corner and don't move so that we can block for you.
Yeah. So. I was so upset you can't recruit this one person into your team. I was kind of hoping that by siding with this one faction, I would get them in my party, and then it didn't happen. And I was like, oh, come on, the coolest people, and I can't have them in my party.
Yeah, so other than that, today, actually at work here, I have been playing SpongeBob SquigglePants for review.
Oh, wow.
And
8.5?
Well, let's just say the game did literally call me a loser. Megan,
I'm a witness to this.
That was supposed to be a children's game. Right?
I know, exactly.
That's going to be no good for the self-esteem.
Yeah, exactly. It's really, it uses the UDraw tablet, which is a peripheral that THQ has made for the Wii, and there's really no reason for it to be on that tablet. It's like a WarioWare-esque type game that you could have just done with a Wiimote. And they don't do anything creative with the tablet. They are using it basically like a DS touchscreen, which is really lame. Anyhow, so...
Just another unit to sell, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
Another peripheral.
They slapped SpongeBob on it, and I guess, you know, everything sells like crazy.
Imagine they sold, like, maybe 100 units of that UDraw thing.
Yeah. I mean, the tablet itself is pretty cool, and I think it has a lot of potential, but the only person making games for it is THQ, because it's their thing, and they're just, I don't know.
Right.
They're just not getting it.
They're not utilizing it.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to Portal 2 as well, which means I gotta finish Dragon Age 2 this weekend. So that
Yeah.
Well, if you skip all the side quests, you don't have much more to go.
Yeah, if you just, you can tear through it if you ignore the side quests. But then
I find them interesting.
Yeah.
So
it's one of those things where it drives me crazy until I actually do a side quest and it's just blinking at me that I have to do
it. I actually like the character stories way more than the main plot itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, the main plot is getting kind of like, ugh, why do I care, you know? Because I'm trying to think, you know, thinking back to Origins, like, how does this all tie in together? And it just doesn't seem to tie in, at least at this point. It's just kind of like a random side story.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
It hints at the, sort of at the end, it might possibly tie in. But it's one of those things where I'm like, I have no idea because I never wrapped up the whole thing with Morrigan in the first game, really. Not even with the Witch Hunt DLC. And so you're kind of like, is this going to be another weird cliffhanger where you just don't resolve certain character issues or story lines? And I don't know.
Yeah. So we'll see. I should be able to finish it this weekend if I play it like all day on Saturday and Sunday. So... okay, so that's what we're playing. So our topic this week is actually the topic from last week and the Great Lost episode, which I actually wasn't here for, but I heard was epic. And
that's going to like show up like 20 years later.
Yeah.
And
so due to technical difficulties, the episode that was recorded last week just disappeared. GarageBand crashed just as we were finishing, I believe, is what this case was. So last week, our editor-in-chief, Hillary Goldstein, wrote his, I don't know how often he publishes his column. It seems kind of sporadic.
It's,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like monthly or
five.
Yeah.
It doesn't look consistent.
Yeah. So
when he has time.
Yeah, but anyhow, so he wrote a column about kind of games feeling like they have to make a game out of everything. For example, you know, you've got collectibles in games. So you have a story, and then you have to, there's this extra game of going and collecting things. And, you know, you can sort of blame Microsoft for the whole achievement thing, which has definitely changed the way I play games, mm-hmm. for sure. But, you know, there are other things too, like whether you're being a Paragon or Renegade in Mass Effect, and that you're not really reacting with your character the way that you just would in your gut. You're thinking like, oh, I want to max out Paragon, or I want to max out Renegade, which actually isn't the case for me because I don't care either way. I just go and do what I think feels right for each situation. So I usually end up, you know, some of both.
Yeah, but the odd thing is that the game doesn't reward you the same way as if you choose one or the other. Like, you don't really get anything for going with your gut instinct, which is too bad because it's a lost opportunity. I mean, I like that about Dragon Age Origins. I know some people didn't like that they had no idea what the consequences of their actions were going to be or how people were going to react. But I liked that too.
Yeah.
I actually thought that added a dynamic Alistair kind of swerves, you know, where you think if you do certain romantic things, he actually gets more shy.
Yeah, there's actually another game that does that. It's called Life. No, Real Life.
Oh, okay.
See.
But I'm bummed. Yeah, that flew over my head. I was like, Life, like the board game?
Yeah. I'm sorry, that was bad.
That's okay. But yeah, but it is interesting that that people like. I don't mind certain things streamlined, but when it gets to the point where, like in Dragon Age 2, it has like a smiley face for comedy and a heart for romance.
Yeah, I know. Like I find that a little annoying too. I wish you could turn it off.
Yeah, that would be great.
I would like to play without it because I loved, you know, playing that way in Origins. And I, you know, I had a big argument with, well, not a huge argument, but a debate, let's say, with my husband about that because he didn't get any of the romantic options at all in Origins. And he says that's a fault of the game, that if he wanted to do that and it wasn't clear in his dialogue choices how to do that, then that was a fault of the game. And I said, no, I think that that is part of the game, is figuring out what you're supposed to say when. And we had to agree to disagree on that.
Or it's like with Mass Effect 2, not to pick on BioWare because everyone knows I love them, but like the whole thing with Paragon is always in blue, or Renegade is in red, or Paragon's always the top choice and Renegade's always – like you always know – what it is, and I would rather not know because the consequences of your actions would be so much more interesting if you didn't know what's coming, or you're like, wow, I didn't expect to kick that guy out a window, or wow, I didn't expect to say something nice. Is kind of, it adds a dynamic.
Yeah, like I said, when I played Mass Effect, I didn't pay attention to that stuff. So in the first one, I was on some planet, I forget what it was, but you had to collect like fur from these like monkey creatures or something or other. And every other planet I had been to was filled with hostile life forms, so I assumed that you had just had to kill these things to get them, and in truth, you just had to pick them up. So I like ran over a bunch of them when we landed, and Kaden is like, "Man, I don't want to get on your bad side." And I'm like, "What? What did I do?" It's like, "Oh, I guess they're friendly creatures. Oh well."
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, one of the things that Hill mentions in his article is how everyone is using the term gamification, even healthcare companies.
Yeah.
Which is just like interesting because it's weird that even something like a healthcare company thinks that we need to use terms that make something so mundane seem fun or interesting, you know? And I think that's actually a little bit concerning because, you know, going back to Stephanie's point of life, you know, that's kind of how life is. And there's no need to, I mean, but then I guess you could also go back and say like, are we trained that way? Because when you're in elementary school, you know, you get a foil star, or you get a reward or a certificate or a bumper sticker or whatever to kind of reward you for being like this good person. And, and it is a gamification of the whole thing. So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to kind of think about like, what does gamification actually mean and how does it actually apply to our real lives as well?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not just healthcare that's like everybody's doing.
Yeah.
It, so
yeah.
It's, even like, you know, the high end up corporate people like at their little retreats do weird stuff that's like stupid games. I don't know. Did you guys, I don't know. I watched 30 Rock. I love that show.
Yeah.
But there was one time where, Liz Lemon went with Jack to like this retreat thing where they had to build stuff, you know, and like she ended up with like the two smartest people in the room and was able to build the thing like faster than everybody else. And she's like, suck it, nerds. So,
yeah.
It's funny. But I mean, you know, stuff like that happens all the time.
As long as it doesn't, like, I don't mind things like mini games, like finding the gold spiders in Ocarina of Time is a non-invasive way to have sort of a mini game, and you don't have to do it, but if you're in dungeons and you see the gold spiders and want to kill them, you can. Like, that's not interfering with the game, but, like, Hillary brought up the glowing newspapers in Homefront, and I can see why, you know, you're in the middle of an amazing scene where it's very emotional and very engaging, and all of a sudden, like, ooh, there's a glowing newspaper in the corner there. I gotta grab it. Like, that yanks you out of the experience, and it's kind of unnecessary. It's like, did you have to make it so, I don't know, if cartoony? Yeah, cartoony or whatever.
It's distracting.
Yeah, it's distracting. It's kind of like one of those things where, or if I get a trophy for doing stupid things, like I started Sly Cooper on the Sly collection, and I got a trophy for that, and I was like, really? You're going to give me a trophy for starting the game?
Yeah, that's actually one of the small problems I have with achievements, because like you're going to get achievements for things you're already going to be doing, like loading up the game and pressing start.
Yeah, or getting to a certain point.
So it kind of undermines the impact of an achievement. So why not just give us an achievement for something that's truly like notable?
Yeah, you know? Like I think achievements in a game like Pac-Man Championship Extreme makes sense because, okay, you get a million points, so you eat a, you know, 100 ghosts in a row. That's kind of fun. That's kind of a cool way to like meet certain goals, but in a game
that's also part of the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's not distracting or detracting from the game. Like it is a part of what you're doing anyway.
Right. You're trying to get these points and everything. So that's actually kind of a cool, you know, thing to do. But when you get questionable trophies where you're just like, you know, like the one I talked about before in God of War 3, where you get a trophy that says, I didn't do it, but I wish I had. Or you're just like, what does that mean? A, B, I'm horribly offended as a woman. And C, why are you giving me a trophy for doing something I didn't do? Like, I don't understand.
Taunting me.
I have no idea.
The notification you get for like an achievement or a trophy, and I think in the 360, you can actually turn off those notifications. But it really brings you out of that immersion in a game. Like, you're playing and playing, you get a trophy or achievement for something really lame. And then you get that bloop, and you're like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
An achievement.
Or you get the fairy tale.
But bring! Now that I now, you know, thanks for taking me out of this game, kind of, you know, just really distracting.
Yeah. I sometimes think one of the reasons that, like, you know, game developers have these things is to, you know, increase the time that people are playing their game.
Yeah, definitely. It's good for
and
them.
And increase the time that people are then talking about their game or writing about their game or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I almost thought that it would be interesting if, you know, the first time you play the game,
it is the way it is with none of these side achievements. And perhaps there's something that, you know, gets unlocked or whatever, where the second time you play it, there's all this other cool stuff that you can do. Like, I feel like that'd be less distracting and just, I don't know. To me, it'd be better.
I feel like it kind of, it makes some people develop like this really unhealthy relationship with games, and then they get this obsession that they need to get more trophies and achievements. And then so they like force themselves. Yeah. In Colin's case, he forces himself to play these terrible games that are clearly not fun, mm-hmm. just so he can get easy trophies. And mm-hmm. like, just, it's just it's such a waste of your time and kind of defeats the purpose of playing a game. Mm-hmm. And then just having these achievements and trophies is just things that like the developers laid out for you, so it's their roadmap on how to play the game rather than how you yourself want to play the game. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like the
that's true. It's like taking away your freedom.
Yeah,
it's a little extreme, but I mean,
you're still free to play the game, but you have to play exactly how they want.
Yeah, how
to
we
do,
want
with
you 10 to play
headshots
it.
Yeah. before the first level.
Yeah. Sorry, by the way, am I breathing too hard in the microphone?
No,
like,
you're
I can
fine.
Hear it.
You're fine. Like, don't worry about it. I can turn it
down.
Darth Vader, Darth Megan. Yeah, one of the things that Hillary brought up in his article of a game that he thought did the whole collectible thing really well was Alan Wake, and my opinions on the game as a whole aside, I do think what they did with the manuscript pages was cool. However, I would never read those on the screen. It's like Christine and I were talking, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, about all the codex stuff in Dragon Age 2. Like, maybe I'm in the minority, but I'm not going to sit through and go through the codex and read it, like, while it's on the screen.
Totally with you.
Somebody has taken a lot of time and effort to write all that stuff and build this world, and it's in a format that I just don't relate to, and I can't take credit for the idea, but Christine suggested somebody should make an app so you can download it all to your iPhone.
That's a great
and
idea.
Just read it while you're
turn
on the bus.
That's great. Yeah.
Actually, what they did, which was awesome in Lair, the Shadow Broker, is they do have, like, you can access the Shadow Broker's information, and it's like the dossiers for all of the characters, but a little more detailed, and that's a cool way to do it. Like, that's a way to sneak it in. So if you're like, I want top secret information on Garrus, and you can go read it, but it's not something you're constantly having to pick up and, you know, put off your screen because it pops up or anything like that.
But
like,
I think
that
it's unfortunate, though, like in Homefront's case, when you collected those newspapers, it was those newspapers that filled in the gaps of what happened from the initial invasion to, like, the occupation and now the rebellion or whatever. And so I don't think game story, when you're trying to tell a story in a game, you shouldn't have to, this player shouldn't have to go dig up the information to find out what's going on.
Right.
So
you should just, I mean, you create, I mean, as a game developer, you created a story.
Yeah.
So Final Fantasy 13 did that too, where, like, all the stuff was filled in between the chapters with these long giant lists of story things.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
like,
not so much that you don't have to kind of look for some of the information. It's just the, and this is terrible coming from someone who has written a novel, it's the reading part, like, while you're playing a game. Like, I think Bioshock did it really well because everything was audio. There was nothing you had to read. Mm-hmm. You just listened to these things. You could keep on playing while you were listening to them. But, like, just sitting on a television screen reading a bunch of text is just not the way most people want to do it. So
that's totally,
and it's almost regardless of how it's presented, too. Yeah. Like, it doesn't really matter, like, how nicely it is made and how readable it can be or how you can see it. It just seems like a waste of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. Because
they put so much effort.
Which is that's why I kind of maintain that, like, just storytelling in video games, period, is just not up there with films and novels. Because just because of these things where you have the experience is supposed to be interactive, but then you're playing, and then you hit a cutscene, and then you have to relink your control, and
you have
watching.
To stop, and then
now
all
you
the
have
stuff
to
happen.
Now not only that, you have to read more to experience.
So there's like cutscenes, and you're reading, and it's like it's a lot of different
that's
elements.
That's just how I feel about it.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind if it was just a smoother, or more balanced experience. Mm-hmm. Where I'm just like, I don't mind cutscenes as long as they, you know, are relevant to what's going on and explain what's going on rather than me having to be like, I have no idea what just happened. Now I have to go into my files and flip through all of these notes and try to figure out what's going on. Because that does take away from the gameplay experience, which is what games are supposed to be about.
Yeah. I mean, in Dragon Age 2, I've done it like a billion quests that I had no idea what it really was. It's just like, you get all those letters at your house. So it's like, accept. And it's like, okay, there's quests here. I just go on my map and do them. And then like one time I like ran into one of the vendors and they just gave me money. And I'm like, oh, I guess I must have just completed
the quest. That's a little bit of a problem with Dragon Age 2. I almost said Dragon Quest 2, where you kind of lose a bit of the story thread because you have so many quests and you know, I talked to this Templar. Am I supposed to recognize that side character? They all look the same to me at this point. Yeah. You help so many people on your side quest. You're like, thanks for helping me earlier. You're welcome, I think.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
I miss a simpler time of gaming.
Yeah.
When it was just you just played the game. You just went through. There were no side quests. There were no like ulterior motives. It was just you just played the game from start to finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no DLC to try to fill it out later or anything like that.
Well, in the simpler times of games, you just simply didn't have the technology.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's true. But I mean, in a way, there was a really clear objective. Like there was no confusion as far as like what I had to do when I was playing.
But there was also no like emotional attachment to what you're doing.
Right.
Well, I don't know. I mean, some of the older RPGs are still my favorites. And they're not nearly as complex
But they kind of had a story to, you know, give context to what you're doing.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm just going back to the time of the PlayStation, I'm saying.
Like, I love the PlayStation. It's probably my favorite console.
Stephanie schooled me and reminded me that the best JRPGs came out. I always say
there's so many.
Because my favorite RPGs came out on the Super Nintendo, but the PlayStation had tons more.
Yeah.
Which I'd forgotten. So
we can probably list them all off and we'll fill the entire podcast.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've said it before. Heavy Rain is the game that I think has done the whole story and not knowing what the consequences are going to be better than anybody else, because it's not like you don't fail in Heavy Rain. Well, you can fail at your current task, but that doesn't mean it says game over and you start over. You just you have to live with what you did. So
I like that they didn't give the player time to metagame and like think about what they're about to do. But like story-wise, it's still really like shaky foundations, because it's just not consistent. And I mean, the game actually lies to you to keep that twist at the end. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. Is it safe to spoil?
No, let's not.
Okay, yeah. All right.
We've gotten yelled at way too many times.
All right, but I'm just saying, it's just that was a terrible game design or story design flaw.
I'll disagree with you there. I liked the story in it. I mean, I don't think it was perfect by any means, but compared to lots of the other game stories.
My biggest issue with that was the controls. Drove me crazy, because I thought the concept was interesting, but it's a really dark game and the controls were driving me crazy. I had to struggle to open a cart of orange juice. Really?
My God.
Really?
You fail. How is that realistic? Juice.
I don't know. I just...
We are talking about this again.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So we'd love to hear your thoughts on this type of stuff. And again, if you haven't read Hillary's article, you definitely should. And comment on it in a nice way. I'll leave that at that. Okay. Unless you guys had anything else to add on the discussion. Okay. I hope it was as epic as it was last week.
It was still pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to move on to questions. As always, if you have questions, you can send those to IGNGirlFight@gmail.com. Our first question comes to us from Kenneth. Kenneth has a relationship question. Boy, we're getting more and more of these.
I think because we answer them seriously. We're certain podcasts are a little silly. Yeah.
Hey, I answer all questions seriously on the other podcast.
Yes.
I blame Greg.
So, Kenneth's question is, he wants to know if there's anything that a guy could do in a relationship that would make us kind of second guess the relationship. Well, there's plenty. Lying,
cheating.
Yeah. Lying is probably even, I think Dana was saying, even about small things, like just own up to if you made a mistake or you broke something, don't hide it.
Yes. Yeah. Hiding things in general, I think, is pretty bad. Even if you think it's embarrassing or you think that it may make your significant other think less of you or something, I mean, she will probably just be happy that you fessed up to it.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think you kind of have to just learn the idiosyncrasies of your significant other. Like, some people tend to like attention and some people don't. So if you give too much attention to someone who doesn't like attention, then that kind of drives them away.
You might be wondering
bit.
What's up. Like, why does this dude give me so much attention? Like, get a life, dude. You know? Yeah.
You could see on what side of that I am.
Yeah. You're so laid back from what we've
Don't constantly ignore her either. Which is trying to talk to you and you're like, well, I could talk to you. Or I could watch this tennis match between two guys from Russia I've never heard of and don't care about. You know, it's kind of like, I notice that guys do tend to tune out.
Oh, yeah. No, they're really good at that.
Yeah.
It seems.
One of the things I really like about my friend who has a girlfriend, when I play games with him, and his girlfriend calls, he'll actually be like, hey, can we pause a second? I need to take this call. Uh-huh. And he actually takes the time to talk to his girlfriend about whatever he needs.
Yeah.
And I think that's really sweet.
That's
so
nice.
For a guy to stop playing games to talk to his girlfriend, it's hard to play.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And if he can do that, what's your name? Kenny?
Kenneth.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to, you know...
That is awesome.
Yeah, it just, you don't have to shower someone with too much attention, but at the same time, it's like, don't totally ignore them when they're trying to talk to you about something serious, you know, like not necessarily even nagging, but hey, can we talk or whatever. It's kind of like your attention needs to be.
Even when it's not something serious, like I feel like I talk about all kinds of nonsense with my husband and it really like... I think it's amazing because there'll be times where he'll like bring up something. And I'm like, oh my God, you were listening to me? I was just like rambling and like, you didn't need to pay attention to that. Yeah. No need for that. And you're like, of course, I listen to everything. And so I'm like, oh,
it's like
well,
small
that's
things
nice.
Like that.
That's the right answer.
Yeah.
Good
I'm
job.
Like, wow, you were paying attention. That's ridiculous because Lord knows I don't pay attention to everything. But
yeah. Alrighty, cool. So next question comes to us from Michelle. Michelle is currently a junior in high school, and she is having problems balancing out her video game play with her schoolwork because she's got a lot of homework. So she wants to know if any of us ever had a problem while we were in high school or college where we really, really, really wanted to play games, but we couldn't because school was more important, and if so, how did we manage that situation?
I managed by doing my homework at lunchtime or on the bus because I was on volleyball team to a game. So I kind of snuck homework in where I could. So by the time I got home, like everything was clear and I could go and lock myself in the Nintendo room, as we called it, and play ridiculous amounts of RPGs and other games on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't much of a gamer when I was in school, but I did have close to a full-time job when I was in high school. So I too had to sneak in homework when I could because I worked so much. And it's usually pretty easy to do. I mean, I don't want to say that your classes are, you know, easy and you should do this with no problem. But like, you know, I had a study hall the first period of every day so that I could go and do my homework from the night before in the morning and have it all done. So that worked for me.
Yeah, back when I was in high school, I had the PlayStation and then had the PlayStation 2 for a short amount of time. But then, you know, I had kind of transitioned into PC gaming and I had to mostly work on the computer to write most of my reports. So I just would kind of make sure to, I mean, this is going to maybe sound bad, but I kind of would reward myself. Like if I wrote like a page, I would like take a break and like play some Doom. And then I'd go back. You know, it was like a reward system. And like, I mean, I don't think my parents would be like, oh, I thought you were writing a paper. I was like, no, I am. I just finished a page. So this is like my reward. So it was nice. Maybe I was game, like gamification of writing a paper but it worked for me, you know. And it's like my parents didn't really mind because they knew, like, you know, as long as you get your work done and you bring home the grades, that's all that matters. Like, I would definitely not recommend, like, you know, putting off homework, like, because you. That's so important, especially in junior year and you're trying to get into college and everything.
Wouldn't it be funny if like the developers actually put in like a message that mid-game when if you've been playing too long and be like, hey.
Go do your homework.
Go do your homework.
Yeah. Or write another page. Or vice versa, you have a program that you'll get the little PSN trophy thing when it's ring. You finished a page. You get to play, you know, 10 minutes of death.
Connect,
you know, this game.
Actually does that. If you've been playing for a while, it'll pop up a thing and be like, tired, sore, take a break.
I feel like that's for, nice. That's for other reasons, though, not really.
Like, get off your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to play Puzzle Pirates all the time, and that would do. They would do that, too, every 30 minutes. They'd be like, hey, you know what? You've been on here for a while. Maybe you should go outside.
Get some vitamin D.
Yeah.
That's nice. I think there should be more awareness like that in games. Yeah. There isn't really. They just want you to sit and play.
I confess that in college that I kind of stopped playing games for a while for fun. I still played games for work. So that was the only time I really played games. So I had to balance going to school. I was a science major. So it was a lot of studying, a lot of lab, a lot of writing on top of like community service work and part-time job and also freelancing. Mm-hmm. So it was actually really difficult for me to play games for fun. So that I just kind of fell out of the phase for a couple years.
Yeah, and I think that that's natural too. I mean, I definitely, like, when I went to college, I didn't really play that much either because it was just so challenging, and I had like a full course load plus an internship plus a job. So it was just, it was really hard. And I mean, unfortunately, sometimes games just have to take the back burner because you got to live life.
Yeah.
And, you know, work towards that success.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But now, the good thing is the games will always be there.
Always
if you
be there.
Go back
Look at me.
Them.
I'm still catching up on a lot of stuff here.
Yeah.
So.
Same.
Okay. Next question comes to us from Brooke. Brooke says she made the mistake of not pre-ordering Dragon Age 2 and thus did not get the Signature Edition. So now she's wondering if she should just wait until later in the year to get the game at all, because she's got plenty of games in her backlog to keep her busy. And she's thinking that BioWare will probably release some sort of special edition for the holiday season that might be worth waiting for. And I agree completely, because they did that with Origins.
They yeah,
released
they did.
That huge edition that had every single piece of DLC included in it. So, yeah, at this point, I would say wait.
Yeah, I would say wait, and they'll have, you know, like more DLC stuff, and they'll include the DLC stuff that you missed with the Signature Edition. And you'll get more for about the same price, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if she wants to only play Dragon Age 2, then yes, waiting is good. But with the lineup this year, if she plans on playing other games, the backlog is just going to grow. Just,
yeah.
That is true. Yeah. With Mass Effect 3 and Elder Scrolls and all these other games coming out, it's...
I would say try to borrow it if you can and just play through it now that you can play through it and then
decide if the DLC is worth it later.
Yeah.
Because I still haven't played the DLC I got with Signature Edition.
So. Yeah.
I don't know.
But mine was, it seemed like it was worked right into the game.
Yeah.
The DLC. I don't know.
Oh, did you register your, like,
yeah, yeah.
EA? Oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even know what was DLC and what wasn't. It was just, that's
yeah,
just the
I
game.
Yeah, I had that with Mass Effect 2, which is always good. It's not jarring and the quality doesn't necessarily go down. I cannot say enough bad things about Overlord compared to Leia the Shadow Broker on like, Mass Effect 2 or Arrival. Mass Effect 2. So when it's like integrated in the game really well, then it's really enjoyable. But when it's clearly DLC that they kind of rushed out, then you're like, oh man, it's not a good experience.
Yeah. I've actually never played a DLC like beyond the core game, especially for Mass Effect.
Yeah, I haven't either. The only DLCs I played were in Dragon Age, and that's because they were kind of already in the game when I started playing them. So I didn't know the difference.
I don't think I ever have, because I've just never really gone out of my way to do
that. Because, I mean, when they release all this stuff after the game, like, I'm just not motivated. I feel like, I'm done with game.
Yeah.
I don't feel motivated to go
There's
get more stuff.
There's just too many games to play.
Yeah, exactly.
You're on to the next.
Yeah, but that's just me. So, next question comes to us from Sam. Sam is wondering, with the hiring of a new video host, if Jessica Chobot would have time to write reviews. I don't think Jess ever did write reviews. You've been here the longest, Megan. Do you remember her?
I don't remember. I mean, a lot of us who weren't on the editorial team proper got a lot more chances to write things like that. But I think she wrote more editorial pieces. I don't remember her writing reviews.
Okay.
I know that for a while I got to write reviews for crummy JRPGs that no one else wanted to play. But... other than that, as the editorial pool has grown, then, you know, a lot of us just sort of didn't have to do that anymore, and other people could take it over. And I don't ever remember Jess doing that.
Yeah,
you can
and
look on the site.
Yeah, you could definitely look or ask her on her blog. But Jess's job was never really the same as the rest of us editors. She was hired as a host. So that was her job. That was what she does. she's still working for IGN. She still does Strategize and I think Weekly Wood. But she's doing other work too, so I doubt very much that she would be writing anything. And he's got a second question. He's from Australia. He wants to know why the 3DS costs so much down there. He says like $100 more. And the last time you checked, the Aussie dollar was doing better than the US dollar. Do we have any idea why it costs so more? I don't know. Everything costs more in Australia,
yeah,
though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's just very expensive. I feel like, I mean, in Asia and as well, actually, like, I mean, a lot of the technology that we get here is just cheaper. Yeah. And it's just more abundant. Yeah. Maybe?
I don't know. Because Australia is a little out of the way, and so shipping costs or something. I have no idea. But everything in Australia is always nearly twice the price.
Yeah.
Regardless of how the dollar is doing.
But
on there.
If you don't know this already, we have an IGN AU team. I would suggest asking them.
Yes, they would
send
definitely
them a note.
Actually, you know, it's funny because I remember talking to some of those guys at our Coco at the little editorial offsite thing that we had, and it was really fun because I was talking to, I think it was Cam, and he was saying that he was going to stock up on stuff because everything there was like so expensive.
Yeah.
It was kind of hilarious. I was like, wow, that's like one of your main objectives here. He's like, yeah, I'm going to like go shopping and buy stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like, a good idea,
right.
Actually.
Good idea. All right. That's awesome. I hope you brought like some extra luggage or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. A suitcase just full of games.
Yeah.
Like contraband.
Yeah. But those guys would definitely have more insight than we do for sure. Us in our little sheltered U.S. world. So next question comes to us from Paul. Paul said he recently played Alan Wake, didn't care so much for the game, but if he hadn't have played it, he wouldn't have discovered this band that was featured on the game soundtrack. So he wants to know, have we ever been introduced to something from a game that we are thankful for, whether it be music, art, or whatever, even if we didn't like the game itself?
That's an interesting question.
That's a great question.
I know that I was introduced to the art of Yoshitaka Amano for Final Fantasy. I'd never heard of him before, never seen his work. And then, like, back in the day when you got, you know, your game and it came with, like, the booklet and everything, it would have character sketches of all the characters. And I was like, man, these are amazing. So I look forward. The only thing I seem to like anymore about Final Fantasy is he still does artwork for it. And I'm like, oh, it's always gorgeous and amazing. And I have an art book of his. And I want to get another one because I'm like, his work is so brilliant. And a video game introduced me to one of Japan's greatest, like, modern concept artists.
Cool. That's hard. I mean, this might be considered a cop-out, but Rock Band introduced me to some bands I would not ever have...
I completely agree with you, yeah. Nicole. Like that, it's funny too, because it's just like when you know, there's songs that I like cared for, but then for some weird reason, like after I played, you know, I'd actually like play them on Rock Band. Like I liked them so much more. Like when they came on the radio, I'd be like, yes,
yeah. See, the
like,
thing for me,
I love the Toadies, you know. And it's like I never really felt that way before. I mean, that was Guitar Hero, but it's like, you know, I never really felt that way before.
Yeah, I mean, my husband and I, we're kind of like I feel old already because we don't listen to anything modern. Like our radio station of choice is First Wave on Sirius XM, which is old alternative stuff. Yeah. So I don't really get exposed to new music except through the rock bands. And that's where I first got exposed to the Killers.
Yeah.
And I since have bought all of their albums and I love
them. Great.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it's so funny that like the music labels are giving, you know, Harmonix and those guys a hard time about licensing and
so
whatnot.
Silly.
And it's like, you should be paying them.
Yeah,
to have your
it is
in
a
there.
Huge service. What, you know, what they're providing. I mean, like I definitely there are songs that I just enjoy all the more after kind of exploring them. And for me, I mean, again, I think like my musical taste is very much lies in the 80s and like early 90s. Uh-huh. So yeah, there is like some new stuff that I discover there. But then it's also just like, oh yeah, this song.
Yeah.
This song was awesome. Right. I totally forgot about this. You know, so for me, it's almost like kind of like remembering some really good stuff that I had forgotten about. So like, yeah, I love that. I absolutely agree with that.
I agree with the reader who asked that question that Alan Wake had a pretty awesome soundtrack. And I like the game itself, but there are some instances where I didn't enjoy the game itself, but I love the soundtrack. I think it was... I can't think of any examples off the top of my head for some reason right now, even though I just said there are some instances. But I feel like a good score can still enhance the game. Like,
yeah.
a lot. So
yeah, I didn't care for Alan Wake as a whole, but it nailed atmosphere. Yes. And music is a huge part of that. So
even like the game trailers, like the, you know, like the was it Mass Effect, or I'm trying to think of what the trailer was, but there was, I mean, there have been times where I've watched a trailer and then I'll be like, what is this band or who is this? Because like, I want to know what song it is, because it just totally sets the tone and gets you excited. And then you actually figure out it's like a really good song as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Alrighty. Cool. Next question comes to us from Steve. Oh boy. Steve says, as a quick test of our Dragon Age fandom, how many lyrics of This Is War by 30 Seconds to Mars can you guys sing in unison? This is apparently the song that is used in the end credits and in the trailer. And that would be all of zero for me, because that's probably the only time I've heard that song. Watching through the credits.
No. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, sorry. Which I do. Every game I play, I watch through the credits. I make a point to. Those people work so hard. They deserve to, at least, even if I don't know who they are and never will remember.
It's one of like the most fun parts of Portal.
Wait, oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
That's another instance, actually, where I was like, what the hell is this song? Like, I need to know more about this.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There you go. There's another instance.
Yeah. Okay. Next question comes to us from Holly. Holly is looking for some good game suggestions to play co-op with her boyfriend. They've already played through Lego Harry Potter. She said he's into things like Dead Space, Red Dead, and Uncharted. She's into Dragon Age and Mass Effect. They're thinking of trying Gears of War, but are looking for some other ideas. Well, I haven't played it, but I heard the multiplayer in Uncharted 2 was really good.
It's multiplayer, but I think she's looking for more for like co-op to play together, the campaign.
Oh, okay.
Hold out for Portal 2.
That's
the one to look out for.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for. I mean, you know, me and the husband.
I hear that, I played Kirby's Epic Yarn and really loved it, and I heard the co-op for that is really fun. Mm. It is not a game for babies. It is an awesome game, Kirby's
Epic
Yarn.
Other co-op, well, kind of co-op multiplayer for the campaign is New Super Mario Brothers Wii is so much fun, and it gets really aggravating, because then you kind of like mess each other up.
Yeah,
even though you're supposed to be helping each other, when I play with four of my three other my friends, we end up like trying to sabotage each other's, because you know, the screen keeps going.
Yeah,
and
then
if you lag behind, you die. So they would always try to hurry up like ahead of me, and then I'm like, wait, guys, stop jumping.
I feel like Nintendo games really have always done a good job at that. You know, whether if it was like Donkey Kong Country.
Oh, Donkey Kong Country Returns is a good one.
Donkey Kong Country is great. And you know, just like the old like Mario Kart games are always really fun too. I know.
Mario Kart.
Much fun with, you know, I used to play those with my brother. Uh-huh. And it would just be like, man, you know, I carried you through the Rainbow Cup. I carried you.
Racing fights are a lot. Racing games, I don't like that much on my own, but with co-op or multiplayer, those are
so much
fun. So you can't exactly do like a local co-op for Need for Speed Hot Pursuit, so three of us just pass a controller back and forth, but we went online and played with other people, and that's actually really fun.
Yeah
I actually really enjoyed that.
I miss that, actually. You know, if you think about it, I do actually miss like a racing game that you could just play with another person.
Like a local co-op, as opposed to I have to hop online and play against strangers.
Do you guys remember F-Zero?
Yeah.
Yep.
Vaguely. That was a beautiful game.
It was awesome.
Back on the Neo Geo.
Yeah.
Liked that game. Anyway.
There's been many versions of that game.
So yeah.
My husband loves that game, too.
Yeah, it's a great game.
But
okay.
A few other
Okay, go.
A few other options, because we were just naming off Nintendo games. I think Army of Two is pretty good in for shooters, and also Borderlands. Check that out to play with your boyfriend.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're okay with, like, super gory stuff. My husband and I had fun playing Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2 together. But it is really, really gory.
That's probably one of the funniest multiplayers I've played.
Yeah, it's really that game is so intense, though. Like, I couldn't play it for a long time because I would be like all like hunched up, like, stressed out. I'm like, okay, I can't do
and
this.
You know
for
what's
a while.
Amazing about that is like they set that atmosphere and they set that tension without really telling a story, without divulging too many details about what was going on. You're just like thrust in there and you're just fighting for survival, basically.
Yeah,
you're like on the edge of your seat the entire time.
Yeah. All right, so we got time for one more. This one comes to us from Nicholas Fillion. Nicholas says he is currently a mechanical engineering technologist. I don't know what that is, but I'm sure it's cool.
Sounds
and,
fancy.
And he says he's going to go back to school to get his engineer's degree. However, he's thinking of switching from mechanical engineering to software engineering, but he's not sure. He says he's new to programming, but so far he likes it. But he's not sure if he can make a career out of it. Well, you can definitely make a career out of programming. There's no question there. And so he wants advice. Oh, God. I hate when people, like, ask
career advice.
Yeah.
This is new.
Aren't we actually experiencing a shortage of programmers in the Bay Area? So if he got his degree.
There's always a shortage of programmers.
Yeah. Everyone I know is, like, looking for a Python guy right now. So if you learn, you know, if you know your Ruby on Rails, if you know Python or what they call, like, LAMP.
Yeah.
You know, type programmers like that, that stuff is in high demand.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just the web side of stuff. Like there's a shortage of game programmers too. I mean, for that you need to learn C++, which is different, but there are endless opportunities.
I think you're going to be fine in life.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're doing what you love and with the shortage, that you can't go wrong.
Yeah. And
good
it looks
advice,
like he
Neha.
Said he's oh, he says he's French-Canadian, so I don't know exactly where he's from.
But Montreal?
Yeah, okay. But I mean, Ubisoft is up at Montreal, so if you like games,
man.
I'm sure.
Just walk in. Give me a job. I hear you're short on programmers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think IGN's hiring software.
Yeah, we are, actually. We are. Well, we're hiring programmers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I say everybody's hiring engineers all the time.
Yes.
So,
but, you know, in the Bay Area, at least.
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're going to wrap it up for this week. Thanks so much for listening. As always, if you have questions, comments, or feedback, you can send those to IGNGirlFight@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/IGNGirlFight. And you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/IGNGirlFight. And you can follow each of us individually on my IGN. Neha, do you want to give your handle on my IGN?
Sure. I think it's Neha-IGN.
Yep.
You think?
Megan with an H-IGN.
I awesome. Log into it every day, but I was just like, what is it again? Right.
I'm just Stephanie-IGN.
Yeah.
Yes. And all dashes.
And I have the weird WTP Nicole. But I think we're all listed under staff or editor, so you can definitely find us all there. Anyhow, thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back with you next week.